You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Over the past couple decades, the significance of early childhood learning on educational development has become common understanding. So why isn't preschool part of the public school offering in our state? Governor Gretchen Whitmer has proposed universal pre-K for all four-year-olds, but she could find that universal access to preschool is a pretty heavy political lift. Here to talk about why that is Mike Flanagan, the longtime and now former superintendent of the Michigan Department of Education, and Brenda Resch, a former legislative chief of staff who worked for many years on education policy behind the scenes. Welcome.
Thanks for having us.
So, Mike, what do we know about pre-K and a student's academic performance that we didn't know 20 or 30 years ago?
Well, we know that if we can get kids, for instance, to be read to from birth, really, sounds illogical to some folks. It doesn't seem to fit. But if you can do that, they're going to be reading at third grade level, which is a big deal now.
Very, very, very big deal. So when you talk about this idea of universal pre-K, what do we understand about its importance and its role in a child's life?
You know, maybe a story would, when I worked with Governor Granholm, there wasn't any money. This was during the Depression. And Governor Snyder, to his credit, was very sympathetic to some of the reforms that were started even under Granholm. But I have to say, our first budget meeting when we met, and I brought in a $300 million proposal for four-year-olds that we needed to fund this. And I looked over at the budget director, Brenda would know, Nixon at the time, and he gave me a look like, no, this isn't going to happen. Where I'm going with this is, a year later, Governor Snyder and I had agreed on a metric called third grade reading. And by doing that a year later, after it had been rejected the first year, he accepted it the second year. And they phased it in over 2 years. And it was a big deal. You get four-year-olds who, you know, I think the old argument is kind of like, well, the family should be doing that. And ideally, yeah, the family should be doing that. But if there's a reality out there of what is happening and isn't happening that we have to take into account. So I really appreciated that.
So just so we all understand and we're all clear, where does pre-K figure right now into the state's current school funding formula?
Well, the state currently spends about $245 million on pre-K programs, the Great Start Readiness Program. So as Mike mentioned, going to a universal program would need about $400 million additional dollars on top of that for about $645. So it is a monumental amount of money, yes.
And again, to get everybody on the same page, because maybe not everybody had pre-K in their life, Great Start Readiness entails what?
That is the preschool program for the state of Michigan. It was originally Michigan School Readiness Program, started in 1985. It was renamed for GSRP in the 90s, I think. And that is the premier preschool program for Michigan in terms of a public program. And its purpose was to target at-risk four-year-olds, the neediest of the student population at that age level. Because a lot of families, you know, Mike was mentioning earlier how important this is, and it truly is. There's great evidence out there to show the benefits of quality, high-quality preschool programs. A lot of families have already undertaken that responsibility for themselves. So that really leaves the families who can't afford it or whose students are extra needy for whatever reasons. And that's where the state has tried to step in with these programs and say, we're going to try to make sure every young learner is given the right start to enter kindergarten as ready as possible.
Just for the historic overview, Mike, when did the idea of universal pre-K or expanded pre-K first get pitched by a governor or a legislator in Michigan?
You know, maybe,
walk us back.
maybe Governor Engler a little bit, but, you know, I was the ISD superintendent in Wayne at the time. My own education on this was 25 years ago. I was superintendent in Farmington Hills, and we were closing schools, and two principals came in and said, Mary Lou Somerville was one of them, and said, why don't we take the two we're closing and making them into early childhood centers? And I said, what are you kidding? We're K-12. What do you mean early childhood? So I had to come a long way. And then I realized it made me more sympathetic or empathetic of others who didn't understand this, because it was an education for me. And one of the things that I told that story to Governor Snyder in this case, when I could tell, I'm generalizing, but in general, it was this piece I mentioned earlier, that this should be done in another way. At Wayne ISD, Governor Engler came down and visited one of our Head Start centers. We had about 20 of them. And I don't think he was that impressed, but he kind of started to get it. But I would say it got into full bloom more. It was more timely for Governor Granholm. It was part of their platform. There was no money to fund it.
Would it be safe to say, Brendan, it was because it was the depths of the recession that that was the big money roadblock, or were there other roadblocks?
Well, I think at that time, that certainly was a barrier. There's often a barrier of funding because there's always a question of efficacy around preschool programs. Right. And there's a lot of disagreement about how successful they actually are in terms of moving student learning ahead. The evidence, I think, clearly shows that high-quality preschool programs do work. So then the question becomes, are we offering high-quality programs all across the state? Is every program that we would be funding going to actually move the needle with the children in it? So, and those are a lot of the questions that you find policymakers pushing back with, regardless of whether there's funding available, because maybe that funding is better spent on another area, either within the K-12 sector or as a state, you know, if you're looking to pull from funds with other than school aid funds, you know, what are the priorities for the state otherwise, like roads and things like that. So there's always the question of funding availability, but also the efficacy of these programs. And there's a lot of studies out there nationally that have mixed results on this topic.
That have mixed results on how effective pre-K can be.
Right. And so it really depends on quality. And even high-quality programs, you can sometimes see learning losses when those kids hit third grade. And so there's always this balancing act between needing to, yes, give them a good, strong start in preschool, but also make sure, what are we doing in those grades 3 and on so that we're not losing them at that point?
So, yeah, losing the progress that they might have made in those
right.
early years. I want to go back to something you referred to, Mike Flanagan, and that was in the first few weeks of Governor Snyder's first year on the job, he laid out clear goals to expand access to preschool and early childhood learning. Here he is in 2011 from his first State of the State speech.
We must do more to help students achieve academic success. We've been spending money without delivering the results needed to give our young people a bright future. It is time that we view our educational system that runs from prenatal through lifelong learning. It is time to start talking about P20 instead of just K-12.
So, Mike, as you listen to that, I see you're kind of flashing back there. Who generated and who championed that idea within the Snyder administration?
Well, I mean, I'll take some credit for that because I think the budget, when I talked about delivering the budget to him and having our session with him, I think it got him thinking about it. But as I said, it wasn't really universally thought about within his whole cabinet. So I give him tremendous credit. I think he was up against some things, not only in his own cabinet, with some of the legislature, often because of what Brenda says. I mean, some of them haven't produced results. So that's why Great Start had quality measures around it in order to make sure that we were funding programs or increase the chances we were funding programs that were going to have the impact. But I give him a lot of credit for also taking the third grade reading as his metric. We co-owned. He wanted me to co-own one with him. At first, he was going to do high school graduation. That one never works. It's too late. It can be inflated. You know, hey, get the kid out. Let's move along.
That doesn't tell you what you need to know.
Exactly. And it doesn't in time. You know,
yes,
it doesn't tell you
yeah.
in time. So I, you know, there's some concern now about the penalties involved as they're working through this. But the idea that at least we're focused on that and knowing that kids, if they learn to read by third, they'll read to learn from there on in.
Brenda, was this idea, the P-20 idea, ever pitched to lawmakers as a real serious policy proposal? I mean, how was this received in the legislature?
It was discussed for sure. It's long been a national trend, I think, towards a broader cohort, so to speak, of education focus. You know, it was a big move for Michigan, no doubt. Yeah. I mean, 2014 to 2015, $130 million added dollars to that preschool program. It was, I think, it leaves Michigan ranked 15th in the country in terms of preschool funding, and it was the largest funding increase across the country at the time, for sure. And it added slots for 21,000 four-year-olds. This was a really big move for Michigan. And those four-year-olds, that first cohort of students, was now last year's third graders. So we just got their first MSTEP scores just a couple of weeks ago.
Right.
And so we get our first sort of look at how it may be having an impact here in Michigan. I think it's still too early to say really one way or another whether that large infusion of funding has worked for Michigan per se, because we only have that 1 year of data to really look at so far.
You need more time.
I think so. I think others might agree.
Mike, walk us through what happened through the rest of Governor Snyder's terms from that point when he unveiled this in his 2011 State of the State speech.
Well, I think others got on board. I mean, I think his leadership, and as I said, I didn't know him when I first transitioned to his administration. You're technically not part of his administration as superintendent. You can be, you know, he did invite me for a monthly one-on-one with him and to cabinet meetings. But I think as he gave me opportunities and the people I worked with opportunities to meet with other people within his administration and then some key legislative leaders, it started to change the tide. Because as I said, at the risk of blaming Governor Engler on my earlier comments, it wasn't a thing then. Mm-hmm. I mean, my mother was way ahead of her time. I was the oldest of eight in Brooklyn, New York. And she decided at the time to drive kids to nursery school, it was called then, in order to get some experiences that she couldn't provide all eight at the same time, to say the least. And I look back and realize she kind of just was ahead of her time and realized that you needed help at this. My own kids, for instance, we have seven grandkids, and my three kids, they're almost too hard on themselves. They've heard this from me all the way back to when they were very little. And there's a point where, you know, if you didn't read to them one night, everything will be fine. The world's not going to blow up. But this enormous pressure on probably most of your listeners, the nature of Michigan radio listeners, I think, get this. Mm-hmm. It's trying to help others understand that the more we can have that happen, they're going to be really situated well for kindergarten.
If you've just joined us, we're talking about the prospects for universal pre-K in Michigan as we talk with former state school superintendent Mike Flanagan and Brenda Resch, who's a former legislative chief of staff. She worked on a lot of education reforms behind the scenes in Lansing. She's now a partner with Compass Consultant Group. So as we talk now, three other states currently have universal pre-K for four-year-olds, Oklahoma, Florida, and Georgia. And Illinois is supposed to be slowly rolling out universal pre-K for three-year-olds over the next several years. Do you see this as a growing movement?
Not necessarily. Again, because of those mixed results that you see in some of those states who've tried the universal pre-K. I think Georgia State University had a study a few years ago that found by the time those children got to first grade, there was no discernible difference in the performance between students who had the preschool program and students who hadn't. In Oklahoma, they started their program in 1998, and in subsequent years, their reading scores actually declined. They may be on the upswing now, but that's a long time. And so, again, it raises serious questions about what the quality of the programs are, what the oversight is of that quality. I know the Michigan Department of Education works very hard to try to exercise oversight there and make sure that the programs across the state are of highest quality, but that's a big lift. I mean, when you look at the original evidence for preschool programs, one of the most popular studies that advocates will point to is the Perry Preschool Study that was in Ypsilanti back in the early 60s. And that was such a small-scale, intensive program. It absolutely had results. If you could replicate that across all districts or across all schools, that would be terrific.
If it's
right?
Scalable.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's the scalability of it that really is a concern and a question mark out there. And when you see states like Oklahoma and Georgia, and I think Florida even has had some disappointing results with their program, it brings up very important questions about what the best use of that money is, whether it's better directed towards a across-the-board K-12 spending or just targeting preschool.
So as someone who really experienced good pre-K when you were little with your own mother driving you to nursery school, Mike, what do you feel a good universal pre-K program that would be effective throughout the state that isn't like the Maserati of pre-K programs like the one you just referred to? What would it look like?
Well, first of all, I want to say that I think Brenda hit the nail on the head. This is going to take a few years of data to see whether this is working. The reason I think Michigan standards are going to be different than Oklahoma is they just weren't prepared as we are. We're at a point in time where the research has been larger since 99, I think, with so by 15 or 14 when we were doing this, there was a lot more research. You could put together Great Start in a way that talked about and gave very clear standards about what quality high care, high quality preschool would be. You know, some of that is just the number of kids you're dealing with, the training of the folks involved. I mean, some of these end up being, it just, if you're not careful, this can just be babysitting. That's why we have to make sure it's more than that, to Brenda's point, because you could say that same amount of money. If we find over the next few years this isn't what we really think it will be, and I do think it will be a big advantage for us, but if it isn't, you know, if they're trying to find money for literacy coaches and everything else, this is the thing we have to try to make.
I agree with Mike. There are great programs out there right now across the state in the ISDs. There are good private school programs happening. And so I would say that really MDE needs to step up. The Department of Education needs to take a very strong, proactive role in identifying, continuing to, because this work is already ongoing, but identifying the strong programs out there, the strong mentors, and creating models for replication, models for mentorship and idea sharing and that sort of thing across the state. And then just really figuring out how to keep tabs on all of it, which is always a daunting task in a state this large and one department in Lansing.
Does Michigan need mandatory pre-K access for all?
Well, when you say mandatory, I don't know if mandating it is the way to go. That would actually be a very big hurdle. We don't technically require kindergarten in the state of Michigan right now. So a legislative mandate to send your child to preschool is probably a
tough
big
sell.
Yeah.
Well, mandatory availability.
But the voluntary availability
yeah.
of it
at least to have it there. Yes.
Yes. Now there is a question of access and participation too, though, because I think it's something like a third of eligible families currently don't participate, and you really got to think about why. That would be another issue that I think the department should seriously tackle. I think they already are. I know they look at it. I know those slots, all the available slots get distributed, and then what's left over gets redistributed. And there's a whole process of that that's very carefully thought out so that as many of them are being used as possible. But there still is a low participation rate among some families across the state. And that would be something, before we talk about expanding it in a way to families who've already figured it out, what do we need to be doing differently to identify those families, better educate them as to the merits of these programs, and increase their access to it, whether it's via transportation or whatever other barriers are preventing them from getting their kids into these programs that can benefit them?
But I think if we get to a point where we understand how important this is and that we're going to lose our standing in the world if our kids aren't educated, I think we're on the right path. I want to end with that.
Mike Flanagan, former state school superintendent under the Granholm and Snyder administrations, and Brenda Resch, a former legislative chief of staff. She worked behind the scenes on education reforms, and these days she's a partner with Compass Consultant Group. Thanks to both of you for being with us on Stateside.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.